The small market town of Crickhowell in Mid Wales with David Cameron, almost at the end of what has been a bruising campaign for all the leaders. And Prime Minister, what the nation wants to know, in spite of all the messages that you've been delivering and you will no doubt deliver over the next 20 minutes, is how you see yourself forming a government in the absence of that majority.
Well, I'm still fighting for that majority.
Yes, let's take that as granted.
But it's important because we should talk about the results after they're in and talk about the issues before the election takes place. The Conservatives have 303 seats. We need another 23 to form a majority. We're sitting in one right now, Brecon and Radnor, that we believe we can win. And so people still have the chance to shape the election with their vote, and we can achieve an overall majority that gives Britain a strong, stable government that continues with a long-term economic plan that's working, the jobs, the growth, the houses we want to build, the childcare we want to provide, the good retirement we want to provide for our people. Those things are in reach.
And people also have the right to know what is going to happen to the country if you don't get those extra 23 seats and nobody else, Ed Miliband, doesn't form a majority either.
Well, I think that's a very fair question. And one of the reasons I'm campaigning so hard is I think that the alternative to a Conservative majority is a weak Labour leader, Ed Miliband, propped up by the SNP on a vote-by-vote, budget-by-budget, measure-by-measure.
Well, let's come to him
but
in a
I think it's important because of what's happened in Scotland, this Labour wipeout that seems to be taking place, it is a real threat. And that's one of the reasons I'm here in a Liberal Democrat-held constituency saying, you know, if you vote Liberal Democrat, you could end up with an outcome you might not want, which is Ed Miliband propped up by the
SNP. But they don't know what the outcome might be if they vote for you either.
They know that they can get a Conservative majority, and they know what
but
the Conservatives stand
for. But if that doesn't happen, and of course you've acknowledged that that is possible, obviously it's possible, most people believe highly, highly, highly likely. So how many more seats than Labour would you need to have to form a legitimate government?
Well, that's going to be determined by the British public.
No, it isn't.
Thursday.
It'll be your decision
but
in the end. If you have more than, let's say,
all
you
I would
have
say,
ten
John,
seats more
all,
than
all
Miliband.
I would say is that people know with me, look, in 2010, we didn't win a majority, and I put the country first. I formed the first coalition government for 70 years because I wanted to provide strong and stable government for Britain. And I will always put the country first and always do what I can to provide that strong and stable government. But beyond that, I can't really say very much
You've already said people would have serious questions and problems with a government led by a party that had failed to win most seats, and they would have every right to. But Gus O'Donnell, the cabinet secretary at the time, you wrote with him a cabinet guide to what has happened. He told us on what would happen in the event of another hung parliament. He told us on the programme this morning, you don't need the most votes or seats to form a government. It is very hard to see how, in that case, a Miliband government, as you describe it, would be illegitimate, or a con-trick as you put it this morning. How a con-trick?
Well, I tell you why I think it's a con-trick, because what Ed Miliband is saying is, I'm not going to do a deal with the SNP, I won't have an agreement with the SNP, but actually he knows the only way he can become Prime Minister is with the backing of SNP members of Parliament. Now, why is that a problem, and why does that raise huge questions of credibility? Well, for the obvious reason that the SNP don't want Britain to be a success. Indeed, they don't want Britain to exist.
SNP and voters are as British as you and I are. They have
every right to vote and every right to... Of course they do,
but
I've also got every right to warn of the dangers of a government propped up by a bunch of nationalists who don't want our country to succeed.
It doesn't make them illegitimate,
John, you've had Nicola Sturgeon on your programme day after day saying, I'm going to hold the Labour government to ransom, budget by budget, measure by measure. For instance, she is saying that she wants an £190 billion pounds more borrowing. Now, that would mean higher taxes for every family in the country.
But you have to be Prime Minister for the whole country. She made that very clear to us.
The SNP aren't interested in the whole country. They only have one real agenda, which is to break the country up. So, look, of course they have a right to come to Parliament and to act as parliamentarians, but I have a right, I would say I have a duty as Prime Minister to warn of the danger of a government that could be run by Ed Miliband but held to ransom by the SNP, which would mean higher taxes, higher borrowing, weaker defences, and I think would endanger our country. And so that's why I make such a big issue. And, you know, it's not something I'm making up. It's something we're getting on the doorstep day after day.
Well, we get all sorts of messages on
the
doorstep,
as you know.
And, of course,
you can stop this from happening by voting Conservative on Thursday.
Right, well, let's stay with Scotland, and let me try and paint a slightly broader picture. When you offered a referendum 4 years ago, you could not possibly have foreseen the consequences, not just for this election, obviously, but for the survival of the United Kingdom. You took the easy option. You bought off the Scots,
and you have put
the nation at risk as a result.
No, I reject that. The easy option for a Prime Minister, when faced with the SNP in the Holyrood Parliament, the easy option for a Prime Minister would have been to say, not on my watch. Yes, of course, there should be a referendum one day, but let's put it off into the future.
And that would have been the sound thing to do, wouldn't it?
Not at all. I think
it would have rescued the Union.
No, the responsible and right thing to do was to respect the views of people in Scotland. They had elected an SNP...
But you're not respecting them now for this election.
John, you asked the question. You've got to let me...
Yeah, go on.
They elected an SNP majority parliament that wanted a referendum, and I thought the right thing as Prime Minister was to grant that referendum on a fair, decisive and legal basis.
Did you consider the consequences?
Yes, I did. And the consequences are that there was a referendum, there was a vote, and Scotland voted decisively to remain part of the United Kingdom, which I'm delighted with because I'm passionate about our United Kingdom.
And
I want us to stay together.
But
now,
you're putting the nation at risk.
I don't accept that.
Well, let me tell you what, you'll know it, what Lord Forsyth, former Secretary of State of Scotland himself said. You are continuing to put the nation at risk by stoking nationalist feelings in Scotland.
I don't accept that. I'm fighting the nationalists in Scotland. Indeed, I'll be there later today, standing up for Conservative candidates who want a strong United Kingdom and also want our economy to continue to grow and to continue to create jobs and all the other things the United Kingdom can do together. But if you want to know what would I do as Prime Minister on Friday to make sure our United Kingdom stays together, I would say let's complete the work of devolution and have Scottish and indeed Welsh parliaments with tax-raising powers so they're not just bodies responsible for spending money, but actually responsible for raising it as well, I think would help settle our devolution settlement down and make sure we maintain our United Kingdom, I'm so passionate about.
And when you get to Scotland, will you repeat what Boris Johnson has said? If you had respect for the Scottish people, you surely wouldn't have people like him running around talking about a jockalypse now and Ed Miliband popping out of Alex Salmond's sporran like a baffled baby kangaroo. That's offensive.
But Boris is Boris, and he has a colourful way of expressing himself, and we'll choose our own phrases.
You're appearing on the campaign stump with him, and you're expecting him. We expect him to be in your government.
Boris, like me, is a passionate believer in the United Kingdom.
But you accept that language?
Look, that's not my language. That is Boris's language.
It's offensive, isn't it?
Well, that's Boris's language.
Well, I'm asking you to agree with me that it's offensive.
Well, I think it's. I think
if you were a Scot, would you not be offended by that?
I think. Look, it's humour. It's Boris,
and
I'm not going to. Well, it's not. It's not my way of expressing myself. But the point I will be making is that we should be voting for parties that believe in our United Kingdom, but we can strengthen our United Kingdom, even with the difficulties we face, if we complete the work of devolution.
Right. Let's talk about the European Union and Britain's place in that. And another, I would suggest to you, massive risk that you're taking with this country's future, allowing an in-out referendum on the EU.
Call them risks. I call them not ducking. I don't believe in ducking
the
big decisions about our country.
You did it for tactical reasons, to appease your own Eurosceptics and to shoot the UKIP fox. That's why you did it.
No, not at all.
You didn't have to do it.
We have had, in this country, treaty after treaty passing powers from Britain to Brussels, and it is time for the British people to have a decisive say in an in-out referendum. And what I'm saying is I will negotiate a better deal for Britain. I'll get powers back from Brussels, just as I cut the EU budget, just as I vetoed a treaty. I have a track record on these things, and the British people will decide. And
you
frankly,
will get all of those things.
I believe
perfectly well that. That's no more than a possibility. Reminded of what Juncker said.
He came out very recently.
I exclude major treaty changes as far as the freedom of movement is concerned. I exclude them. And the freedom of movement is crucial to what you want to achieve.
He came out and said that treaty change was possible, which I think is welcome. And I'm very clear about the changes.
Not the ones you want.
Well, I'm very clear about the changes that we need. I mean, for instance...
And they include freedom of movement.
What they include... Let me explain exactly what they do mean. Because I obviously want people to be able to go and live and work in other European countries, just as British people do now. But I want to be very clear, if Europeans come to Britain, they shouldn't be able to claim unemployment benefit. They shouldn't be... If they're looking for a job after 6 months, they have to go home. You have to pay into the system for 4 years before you get out of the system, and you can't, as you can now, claim a child benefit and send it back to your family in your home country. Those changes, some of which do require a treaty change and legislative change, they would make a real difference to making sure we can control immigration better in our country. But again, John, there's a bigger point here. I believe that in politics you've got to address the big questions and not duck them. Now, we addressed the big question about our United Kingdom, held that referendum, trusted the people. The people, fortunately, in my view, came up with with a right answer, which was to keep our country together. Now let's trust the people. You often talk on this. Let's trust the people on the European Union. People haven't had peace since 1975. This organisation has changed massively since 1975. I think get a better deal, then put it to the British people and let them decide.
This is going to dominate completely the first, if you get it back into number 10, the first 18 months, and the arguments are going to be enormously damaging. I was talking to somebody on this programme in Nuneaton the other day on part of one of our little road trips. CEO of a very important, very successful high-tech company, just come back from China, and they were saying to him in China, oh, so you're leaving the EU, are you? And an awful lot of people beyond our shores believe that to be the case. Indeed, I think you were on the trip with him.
Well, the British Chamber of Commerce, which is the biggest business organisation in Britain, held their annual conference this year and actually came out and backed the idea of a renegotiation and a referendum. I think business wants to know that there is a strategy and a plan to sort out our relationship with Europe, because it is such an important relationship. And my fear is if we just stick our head in the sand and say, don't trust the people, don't consult the people about this, we will drift towards the exit, and that's not the right answer.
All right,
for
but
Britain.
A final quick thought on that. A tough negotiator has to be prepared to walk away. If you don't get what you want, you are prepared to walk away and then recommend a vote against staying in the European Union.
I've said what we need to achieve.
Is that a yes or no? That's a straightforward question.
I've said what we need to achieve, and I believe we can get that. And I've said if we don't, then I rule nothing out. I've been very clear about that. But I think we can get a better deal. Frankly, the other countries of Europe want Britain to be part of this organisation because of what we bring. We're a big trading nation.
All right.
Well, I sit around the table with them, and people said to me, you'll never cut the EU budget. I did. People said, you'll never veto a treaty. I did. You can get change if you push for it and work for it.
You promised when you came into office to bring the country together rather than driving it apart, obviously. You must have heard in the past few weeks, you must have got this message from the stump that many people believe you have failed. They've seen the very rich getting richer, many poor people getting poorer, and you have a plan to save another £12 billion through cutting benefits, and you won't say how you're going to do it. Is this really bringing the country together?
Well, first of all, let's remember what we inherited. That note saying there is no money, a budget deficit the size of
Greece's,
mass unemployment.
I'm just reminding you of what you promised after you had seen that.
What I promised was that we'd get the country back to work, and we created 1,000 jobs every day. I promised we'd get the deficit down. We've cut it by half as a share of the economy. I said we'd turn our economy round and get it growing. Last year we grew faster.
It's a divided country, is the point.
Look, if you actually look at what's happened in the last 5 years, yes, of course it's been difficult recovering from this great labour recession, but actually inequality is down, child poverty is down. Because we've got almost 1 million people off benefits and into work, we're actually helping people to have a better life. Is there more to do? Do we need to do more to get people into work, to help families with living standards, with the cost of living? Of course there is. That's why I'm so passionate about building on the foundations that we have in this country now, and really making the most of the next 5 years.
Let me remind you of what one of your predecessors, Sir John Major, said in a speech a couple of weeks ago. We need to acknowledge the fact we have a pretty substantial underclass, and there are parts of our country where we have people who have not worked for two generations and whose children do not expect to work. How can it be that in a nation that is the fifth richest in the world, that in the United Kingdom we have four of the poorest areas in the world?
Well, I think John Major's absolutely right to make these points, and that's why our education reforms have got a million more children in good or outstanding schools. That's why we've got more children from poor backgrounds going to university. Our welfare reforms are all about not just saving money, but helping to change people's lives. You know, getting 900,000 people off benefits and into work is a major poverty-tackling programme.
John Major says we cannot be proud of where we are in the tables of quality education around the world. That's John Major. It's not one of your critics.
We've got far more to do. As I say, the free schools and the academies we've set up, that's led to 1 million more children in good or outstanding schools. Am I satisfied with what we have today? No, I'm not. That's why I want another 5 years of standards, discipline and rigour in our schools. I want another 5 years of welfare reform to tackle deep and entrenched poverty.
Hmm. Let's pick up on welfare reform, because you talked earlier about the importance of trust. You'll remember that man on the Question Time programme accused you of failing them, and having no trust in you because of it. £12 billion more benefit cuts. You will not tell us how you are going to do it.
Well, first of all, it's important to reform welfare and get people back to work. That is part of my plan. If you want unreformed
welfare...
talking
about cuts, and I'm asking you how you're going to save the £12 billion that you promised you will save.
First of all, it is half of what we saved in the last Parliament. So
that's
we have a track record.
You could argue that that makes it more difficult because you can't keep cutting by half, but because the logic of that is at the end of it all, there'd be no benefits at all.
The next point I make is that unlike any other party leader in this election, I've actually set out a major welfare change that saves billions of pounds, which is freezing the work-related benefits, like unemployment benefit, for 2 years.
Yes, we know what you have done. I'm asking you what you are going to do.
That is for the next Parliament. And that is a much bigger pledge, very difficult thing to promise.
Doesn't get you anywhere near 12 billion.
Well, that raises billions of pounds.
Yeah, but nowhere near 12 billion.
Well, and then added to that, let's continue with the process of getting the country back to work. We've created 2 million jobs. If we create another 2 million jobs, we have a track record here of getting the country
back to
work.
And again, the first 2 million arguably is much easier than the next 2 million. So if you don't... this really does get to trust, doesn't it? The thing that you majored on earlier. It is all about trust. And if you say, trust us, we can do it, they are entitled to say either you don't know what you're going to do, in which case you're reckless, or you do know and you're not going to tell us, in which case we can't trust you.
Or alternatively, people might say you have a track record of reforming welfare, getting people back to work, making sure we keep these costs down so we can go on cutting people's taxes, making sure we reform welfare so we can have a balanced plan that invests in the NHS. Because one of the reasons we've been able to make that big choice of investing in the National Health Service every year, and it was a big choice when we had the note with no money in it, one of the reasons we've been able to do that is we've taken difficult decisions about welfare, and we've said in the next Parliament we're going to go on investing in the National Health Service every year. We're going to go on cutting taxes for working people as part of a balanced plan of getting the deficit down at the same time. Now, look, let me give you another example.
Make it a quick one. We're nearly out of time.
Universal credit is a massive change to our benefit system, meaning you're always better off in work. I was sat in a Asda supermarket 12:30 last night in the canteen talking to people about the difficulties today if you work more than 16 hours a week. When universal credit comes in, you're always better off in work. So it helps take people out of poverty, it reduces the welfare bill, and it will make our country a better place.
All
and
right.
That's what this is about. Is our country stronger today than it was 5 years
All
ago?
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Is there more to do? Yes. But
right.
I would say stick with the team that's turning things around.
No more sitting in Asda supermarkets at midnight, at least as leader of the Conservative Party. No more campaigning after this election, because you've said that's it for you. This will be the last one. No regrets at all about having committed yourself to that?
Well, I gave a straight answer to a straight question.
Yeah, I'll ask you whether you have any regrets about it.
I have no regrets.
None at all.
In a fixed-term Parliament system, I think it makes sense to answer a question very directly about that. And
yeah,
people
ask you
know
whether you have any regrets. Just you know, the middle of the night, you sort of wake up and you say to your wife, I wouldn't mind another crack after all this, if you get in, of course.
I think that 2 5-year terms is a good period of time. And I actually
bring in
feel,
a reform
but
if you
I
get
feel,
back in then.
No, I don't think you need to do that. But I actually feel more passionate and enthusiastic about the next 5 years, because we're building on really strong economic foundations where we can do something special in this country, which is provide the childcare families need, build the homes that young people want to own, create those apprenticeships that give people a better chance of a better life, have that dignity and security in old age, because we can lock in the improvements to our pension system. These are the things that drive me. This is what makes me want to do the job for 5 more years, because in the end, to me, politics is about making a difference, is about helping to change people's lives, and that's what we can do with the strong foundations built in the last 5 years. But it is all on the ballot paper, because if you think about what an Ed Miliband government backed by the SNP could do with taxes and debt and borrowing, we would go back to square one, and we mustn't do that.
David Cameron, thank you very much indeed.